You won't find a better deal on science-backed pregnancy supplements than at Ritual's Black Friday sale. Get what you really deserve, like a prenatal you can trust. Made with bioavailable key nutrients, it even earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. Save 40% on your first month at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Welcome to Meteorology Matters. We're here today to unpack some truly vital information, especially as we reflect on, well, a pivotal event that fundamentally reshaped our understanding of extreme weather.
And our preparedness for it.
Exactly. You know the date, you know the name, August 29th, 2005, Hurricane Katrina.
A name that still echoes, doesn't it? Especially along the Gulf Coast.
Particularly in New Orleans. The devastation Katrina unleashed was just staggering.
It really was.
Imagine wind gusts consistently hitting over 130 miles per hour. That's like a freight train.
Yeah, just immense power.
And then the storm surge. A wall of water taller than a two-story building sweeping inland.
The images are still hard to forget.
And the result was catastrophic. 80% of New Orleans found itself submerged.
Mm-hmm.
And nearly 1,400 lives were tragically lost. It's a date just etched into our collective memory.
A stark reminder for sure.
But here's where our focus lies today, where it gets really compelling. What have we actually learned in the two decades since?
Right. How have we adapted?
How have we innovated, improved our ability to predict hurricanes and protect against them?
That's the core question.
That's our mission for this Meteorology Matters exploration.
Wow.
We'll look at three major transformative shifts in hurricane forecasting.
Amen.
Then we'll turn our attention to the monumental engineering effort in New Orleans. We'll examine the resilience of its rebuilt flood defense system.
Asking the big questions, are we truly safer?
And what challenges still loom, especially, you know, with a changing climate?
What's truly fascinating here and also heartbreaking is that Katrina served as such a stark turning point, a tragic one, obviously.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about the storm's raw power. It also, well, it ruthlessly exposed critical gaps.
Gaps in what exactly?
In how we understood hurricanes, how we predicted them, and maybe most crucially, how we communicated the dangers.
Ah, the communication piece.
Absolutely. To grasp the human element, think about Max Mayfield. He was the director of the National Hurricane Center back then.
I remember him.
He vividly recalled a conversation with the New Orleans mayor right before landfall. After hanging up, he turned to a colleague, apparently with this deep sense of foreboding.
Oh, wow.
He said, he doesn't get it. Just profound concern in his voice.
That says so much, even with a good forecast.
Exactly. And for its time, the forecast was unusually good. But that statement, he doesn't get it, underscores this huge communication challenge.
A gap between the science and the understanding on the ground.
Precisely. A fundamental chasm in risk perception, in translating foresight into urgent action.
So the lessons go beyond just the storm itself.
Oh, far beyond technology and engineering. It's about the entire ecosystem of disaster preparedness.
Meaning?
From the initial forecast all the way through to community response, how people organize, protect themselves.
The whole chain.
The whole chain. So for you listening today, we'll dive into how forecasting capabilities have been transformed. Then we'll meticulously examine those new flood defenses in New Orleans.
And finally,
we'll grapple with the evolving risks we still face, the persistent ones.
Okay, with that sobering insight into the human side, let's turn to the tech. The incredible transformation in hurricane forecasting itself.
Right?
You might think, oh, it's just faster computers. But the investment, the sheer technological leap since Katrina, it's truly remarkable.
It's far more than just a software update, absolutely. A complete overhaul.
So our first major shift, it revolves around substantial funding and staff increases. Katrina really acted as a catalyst.
An unprecedented boost, really.
Recognizing the catastrophic toll, Congress established the Hurricane Forecast Improvement Program.
HF, as it's known.
And this wasn't just adding a few extra desks. Yep. It was a systemic expansion at the Hurricane Center in Miami.
Plus a massive infusion of investment into hurricane-specific computer modeling.
Right. This wasn't a band-aid. It was a strategic long-term overhaul. An explicit acknowledgement of the value of accurate forecasts.
Both human and economic value.
Exactly. Both former director Max Mayfield and the current director, Michael Brennan, they've openly acknowledged it. Katrina's forecast was good for its era.
But the tools were limited, severely limited.
This sustained funding completely changed the game, gave meteorologists the cutting-edge resources they needed.
It's a clear demonstration, isn't it, that targeted, significant investment yields immense progress.
Measurable progress in scientific prediction,
yeah.
Directly enhancing our safety.
That's absolutely right. The commitment post-Katrina wasn't just a reaction. It was absolutely necessary.
It showed that even brilliant minds are constrained without the right tools.
The computational power, sufficient staffing, all critical. HFE basically laid down a new foundation.
Shifting from reactive to proactive.
Exactly. Research-driven, continuously improving. It fostered innovation that was frankly, missing before.
So beyond the people and programs, what really shifted the paradigm was the tech itself, right? The unprecedented advancements.
The eyes in the sky and the brains behind the predictions.
Let's start with the satellites. The eyes. There's a fascinating, almost unbelievable detail from the Katrina era.
Oh, yeah.
Back in 2005, the satellites tracking Katrina. State of the art then, capturing images every 5 minutes.
Pretty good for the time.
But they had this critical flaw. Their solar-powered batteries ran low when they passed through Earth's shadow.
Oh.
Which meant the day before Katrina made landfall, precisely when it was rapidly intensifying over the Gulf.
Don't tell me.
Those satellites went completely dark for 2 crucial hours.
2 hours. Right when you need the data most.
Imagine trying to track a speeding train but losing sight of it for a big chunk of time. That was the challenge.
Unbelievable. So what's changed?
Today, thanks to a new generation of satellites operational since about 2016, we get high-definition images every single minute.
Every minute. That's incredible.
And critically, no lengthy downtime in Earth's shadow. Continuous high-resolution surveillance.
That makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
Missing those moments of rapid intensification.
Could be the difference between life and death. We're far better equipped now.
Indeed. That continuous monitoring at such fine resolution, it's profoundly transformative.
No more extrapolating from potentially old data.
Exactly. Before, those blind spots forced educated guesses that could quickly diverge from reality during the most dangerous phases.
But now.
Now, near real time, uninterrupted surveillance gives us an unprecedented understanding of the storm structure, wind fields, moisture.
The whole picture.
It's the foundation for much more accurate, timely warnings, especially for rapid intensification, which, as we saw with Katrina, was a huge factor.
And beyond the eyes in the sky, the forecast models themselves, the brains, have seen huge strides too.
Big time.
In 2005, Katrina's track was tricky. First predicted towards Florida, then shifted west to Louisiana.
And the models then were notoriously poor at predicting that rapid intensification the day before landfall.
But today?
Today, the average errors in track forecasting have dramatically decreased. Significantly better.
And what about intensity?
Specialized models now give a much better indication of whether a storm is likely to rapidly intensify. Much improved signals.
But not perfect, right? Michael Brennan warned about that.
Absolutely. Nature can still surprise us.
Yeah.
Meteorologists can still be caught off guard.
You just have to look at Hurricane Otis in 2023.
A truly harrowing example.
Formed as a tropical storm October 24th, Eastern Pacific. Less than 24 hours later.
Landfall near Acapulco is a monster Category 5.
And the models.
They completely failed to predict its terrifying speed and intensity. Over 50 lives lost.
It just underscores, even with vastly improved tech, that rapid intensification challenge remains formidable.
It really does.
And it highlights this broader, unsettling context. Climate change.
Yes.
Researchers find it might not cause more hurricanes overall, but it's likely causing some storms like Katrina to intensify more quickly, more violently, often just before landfall.
Making accurate, rapid intensification prediction absolutely critical.
Especially in our warmer world.
That's a crucial point. Otis is a stark reminder. Our models are better, yes, but the environment is changing.
Warmer oceans mean more fuel.
Precisely. The ocean's the heat engine. Supercharge it, and you provide incredible latent heat for these storms.
So the challenge isn't just where it goes.
But how fast it strengthens.
Mm.
Especially in that critical 24 to 48 hour window before landfall.
It's a race, then. Science versus increasingly dynamic storms.
It really is. An ongoing race.
And that unpredictability, like with Otis, isn't just about wind speed. It connects directly to the deadliest part. Storm surge.
The wall of water.
So what does this mean for understanding and predicting that? Because it's not always the wind causing the most fatalities.
Our ability there has dramatically improved, too.
Storm surge was undeniably Katrina's deadliest component. That destructive wall of water breached the levees, inundated the city.
And initially, experts were baffled, right? Gauges washed away.
Exactly. So scientists like Herman Fritz, an expert in coastal hazards, had to get creative, almost like detectives.
What did they do?
His first stop wasn't a lab, but the ravaged barrier islands in the Gulf. He observed natural markers.
Like what?
Bark stripped off trees by high water, meticulously measured sand scour lines, things like that.
Wow. Using nature's own evidence.
Combined with satellite data, modeling.
Yeah.
They painstakingly estimated the surge height and wind power.
And Fritz emphasized something crucial.
He did. He said, most people don't die from wind. Even with 200 mile per hour winds, you're not going to get thousands of fatalities. You're only going to get that with storm surge, flooding, and inundation.
That insight really reframed the danger, didn't it?
Absolutely. Fast forward to today, the advancements are truly life-saving. Current forecast models are vastly superior. They don't just predict the surge height. They provide sophisticated maps showing potential inundation depths in specific low-lying areas.
That granular detail is invaluable.
It helps officials decide precisely which neighborhoods need evacuation. More targeted, more effective.
Life-saving measures.
And the impact is clear. Historically, storm surge caused about half of hurricane fatalities.
But since 2013.
That number's down dramatically. To about 11%, according to research by Michael Brennan and others.
That's a powerful demonstration. Science and tech directly saving lives.
Preventing countless tragedies. A tangible success story for communities like yours.
That reduction is profound. It's about the forecasting accuracy and communicating the risk effectively.
Visualizing the impact.
Exactly. Translating complex data into actionable info for emergency managers and, crucially, for you, the public.
The hard lessons from Katrina applied directly.
A fundamental shift in approaching the most lethal aspect of hurricanes.
Building on that, imagine getting a whole week's heads up on a potential storm.
That's not just an improvement, it's a game changer for preparation.
Forecasters now have much longer lead times, earlier, more detailed warnings.
Let's contrast that with 2005.
Back then, an official written forecast for possible formation, issued only up to 2 days ahead.
And visualizing weak storm clusters was limited.
Now, the National Hurricane Center can forecast possible formation up to 7 days in advance.
7 days?
Issuing watches, warnings, potential paths much, much sooner.
That extended lead time is invaluable for large-scale evacuations. Time to secure homes, gather supplies, relocate safely.
And for emergency managers, crucial days to pre-position resources, activate shelters, coordinate logistics.
But there's still that challenge, right? Being too certain too early.
Absolutely. Initial Katrina forecasts predicted that sharper turn towards Florida before shifting west.
And Hurricane Ian in 2022.
A stark reminder. Shifted south at the last minute, hitting southwest Florida on the edge of the forecast zone.
Yeah.
Caught some off guard.
Tragically so.
So while we have earlier warnings, that balance between early heads up and pinpoint accuracy, especially for landfall location, it's a persistent challenge.
But the increase in lead time itself provides an indispensable window.
For communities to prepare and take life-saving action.
This balance is delicate. Yeah. Because the further out you forecast, the wider that cone of uncertainty naturally gets.
An inherent trade-off.
But having that initial 7-day outlook, it transforms the strategic advantage.
Also,
allows preliminary preparations, activation of plans. Critically, it informs the public that something significant might be developing.
Shifting the focus.
From reacting to an existing storm to actively monitoring and preparing for conditions that might lead to one. Empowering communities with foresight.
Even if the details are still evolving.
Exactly. A proactive approach. Monumental improvement over the past. Which brings us to that crucial question. What has New Orleans done with these improved forecasts? With this new era of preparedness?
Right, the city at the epicenter of Katrina's devastation.
The flood defenses there underwent a truly monumental transformation.
A direct response to those catastrophic failures.
We're talking about the post-Katrina investment in the Hurricane and Storm Damage Risk Reduction System. HSDRS.
A massive multi-billion-dollar project.
Congress approved a staggering $14.6 billion upgrade, Adjusted for inflation and scope, that's around $23 billion today.
Wow. Not just repairs, them.
Not at all. Construction of a comprehensive 139-mile integrated system. Levees, robust flood walls, enormous floodgates.
And that design goal.
Protect against a 1-in-100-year storm surge. That's roughly 15 feet of water. What a strong Category 3 hurricane might bring.
It's one of the largest civil engineering projects in U.S. history, isn't it?
It really is. Hmm. An incredible feat of ingenuity and resolve to fortify a major American city.
An incredible investment. But the key question, how well has this multi-billion dollar system actually performed under test?
Right. Building it is one thing.
Seeing it hold up under real hurricane pressure is another. Has it delivered?
The first significant trial came in 2012. Hurricane Isaac.
Isaac, right. Category 1, but large and slow moving.
Which meant it brought a substantial 10-foot storm surge, more like a Category 2 surge in impact.
And the HSDRS.
Performed admirably. Held firm. It demonstrated its ability to withstand that level of surge.
So a boost of confidence. Proof it could handle the design 15-foot surge from a Cat 3.
Exactly. A crucial first reassurance.
Then came Hurricane Ida in 2021. A much bigger challenge.
And tragically, on the 16th anniversary of Katrina's landfall,
Ida hit as a powerful Category 4, 150-mile-per-hour winds.
Bringing a devastating surge of 9 to 14 feet to Plaquemines Parish, south of New Orleans.
And there was a breach there, right?
Yes, a levee in Braithwaite.
Yeah.
Importantly, it was not part of the upgraded federally funded HSDRS. That older levee was overtopped and breached. Huge damage.
But the HSDRS itself, the main system.
It held. Water levels of 6 to 9 feet were common along parts of the New Orleans system, reached just a few feet below the top of the West Bank levee.
So critically, no portions of the upgraded system were overtopped.
Correct. No overtopping of the HSDRS.
Okay, that sounds like a success. A major success under a Cat 4.
And in many ways it was. But here's the critical what if that keeps experts up at night.
Uh-oh. What's the what if?
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's National Hurricane Center reported later, if Ida had made landfall just 17 miles further east.
Closer to New Orleans.
Yes. Storm surge heights against the southern edge of that West Bank HSDRS levee would have been 5 to 7 feet higher.
Which would
undeniably overtopping and potentially a catastrophic breach.
And that section protects
246,000 people.
$41 billion in assets. A massive area.
So the system worked, but the margin was razor thin.
Extremely thin. It underscores how even the best engineering has limits when nature pushes that hard. A slight track change could have been catastrophic. That what-if scenario for Ida is truly sobering. It really highlights why distinguishing between overtopping and breach is so important.
Two very different things with different consequences.
Vastly different. Understanding that difference is critical for assessing and communicating risk.
Okay, let's break it down. Overtopping is?
During overtopping, waves or the surge just wash over the top. The levee structure stays intact.
Like a bathtub overflowing.
Exactly. It causes relatively slow inundation behind it, water flowing over.
And a breach.
That's a catastrophic structural failure. The levee fails at its base or a section collapses.
Creating a gap. A gaping hole where floodwaters pour through unabated, rapidly, far, far more serious, much higher potential for loss of life.
Because the flooding is so swift and forceful.
Precisely, often with little warning.
And you said overtopping often leads to a breach.
Yes, that's the dangerous connection. As water cascades over and down the back slope, it erodes the base.
Douring it away.
Right, compromising structural integrity until it collapses. Look at Katrina, 50 major breaches. Almost all were caused by overtopping combined with this erosion.
Wow, and the difference in potential impact.
A 2011 Army Corps study, before the final upgrades, predicted maybe 974 deaths from overtopping in a major storm.
Okay.
But if those levees breached, the estimate jumped to 2,945 deaths.
That's a huge difference. Highlights why preventing the breach itself is paramount.
Absolutely critical for safety.
So if overtopping leads to breaching via erosion, what have engineers done about that specific failure point?
That led to the armoring project, a key investment.
Tell me about that.
The Army Corps spent $145 million completed in 2021 specifically to armor those earthen levees against erosion during overtopping.
And they tested this.
Rigorously. Partnered with Colorado State University to build a full-scale wave overtopping simulator. A massive facility.
Testing materials against simulated hurricane waves.
Exactly. And Louisiana State University Ag Center tested different grasses for resilience, even against things like mowing.
So what was the solution they installed?
Engineered turf reinforcement mats, integrated with specific grasses, installed along the inside, the landward slopes of key levee stretches.
And the claim is?
The Corps states this armoring should greatly reduce or eliminate breaches during overtopping.
Meaning less severe flooding.
Their prediction, inundation depths of only about 5 feet in an overtopping scenario, compared to 15, 20 feet in Katrina's lowest areas from breaches.
A dramatic improvement, but there's a catch.
The critical caveat for you, the listener. This armor, while well-tested in sims, hasn't faced a real-world overtopping by a major hurricane yet.
So it's engineered based on science, but awaiting its first true test.
Precisely. Represents a huge investment, solid engineering, but the ultimate real-world performance is still unknown. Which brings us to another profound question. The system's built for a Cat 3 surge. What happens when something stronger hits?
Because experts say it's only a matter of time.
It's not if, but when a hurricane capable of overtopping these levees hits New Orleans.
Is there historical precedent for that kind of storm hitting the area?
There is. Since 1851, Louisiana has seen 65 hurricanes. But only one brought a surge likely to overwhelm the current system, assuming it works as designed.
Which one is that?
The 1893 Chenier-Caminanda hurricane, a powerful Category 4. 130-mile-per-hour winds, estimated 16-foot surge.
16 feet, that's above the 15-foot design limit.
Exactly. It obliterated the town of Chenier-Caminanda, killed over half its residents, 1,700 to 2,000 fatalities overall. Third deadliest in U.S. history.
Horrifying. Any others?
An 1812 hurricane, possibly a Cat 4, according to researcher Carrie Mock, might also have been strong enough. It highlights this long-standing threat.
So even with the incredible engineering, expert concerns remain high.
Very high. Bob Jacobson, a senior consulting hydrologist, points out a critical distinction.
What's that?
The system was primarily designed to reduce flood insurance costs, meet federal mandates. Not necessarily for a rigorous safety certification against every extreme event.
An important nuance.
He believes some parts could still breach with surges exceeding that 1-in-100-year level, especially along Lake Pontchartrain.
Why there?
Less freeboard. That's the safety margin between expected water level and the levee top. Less room for error.
And he mentioned unpredictable factors, too.
Yes. He notes that in the chaos, unexpected bad things can happen. Like a barge breaking loose, slamming into a flood wall, causing a breach.
So it's not just the design limits, it's the real-world chaos of a major storm.
Exactly. Forces that can test any engineering to its absolute limit.
That really emphasizes the unpredictable nature. So what does this mean for the future? Because the environment isn't static, is it?
Not at all. Climate change is adding profound new layers of complexity.
Altering the calculus of risks.
Unequivocally. It's increasing the risk to New Orleans levees. In two major ways.
Okay, what's the first?
Rising sea levels. Steadily rising. Predicted rise at Grand Isle, the closest tide gauge, is over 2 feet by 2050 compared to 2,000 levels.
2 feet is significant.
And here's a crucial detail. More than half of that relative rise is actually from the land sinking. Subsidence.
Why is the land sinking?
Largely human causes. Extracting groundwater, oil, compacts the soil. And the river levees themselves, while essential for protection, stop the natural sediment deposition that used to build the delta land.
So controlling the river inadvertently contributes to the sinking.
In some ways, yes. We've altered natural processes.
And the implication of rising sea levels.
Maintaining that 1-in-100-year protection requires regularly raising the levees, a monumental ongoing task.
Especially with debates over funding for climate risk reduction.
It's a constant uphill battle against a rising tide, quite literally.
Okay, that's the first way. What's the second?
Stronger hurricanes, a clear trend. Think of them as heat engines.
And a hotter ocean provides more fuel.
Exactly. Allowing them to grow more powerful, intensify more rapidly, assuming other conditions are right.
Like low wind shear, moist atmosphere.
Right. Climate theory and modeling consistently show a projected increase in the proportion of Category 4 and 5 hurricanes.
And more storms that rapidly intensify just before landfall.
Which is a huge shift. It amplifies the risk to a system designed for a Category 3 storm.
Creating a dangerous mismatch. Defense capacity versus intensifying threats.
Precisely. We're meticulously building for one scenario, while the changing climate prepares for another, more extreme one. What's fascinating here, though, and a powerful argument for sustained investment, is the clear, quantifiable value of investing in meteorology.
Despite the fragility if commitment wavers.
Right. The investments post-Katrina yielded immense returns, a compelling example of science funding providing tangible benefits.
How significant were those returns?
Consider this. The National Science Board, back in 2006, recommended a $300 million annual increase in hurricane research funding, a massive jump from the $20 million at the time.
And the Hurricane Forecast Improvement Program, HFE, born from that.
Directly led to over 50% improvement in track forecasts, over 30% in intensity forecasts since 2005, across all lead times.
That's huge progress. And the economic impact.
A 2024 study found these advancements reduced average costs by an astonishing $5 billion per major landfalling hurricane between 2005 and 2020.
$5 billion per storm. How?
Two ways. Either decreasing deaths and damages via better evacuations and prep.
Or
increasing confidence in decisions not to spend money on adaptation if a storm shifts away, avoiding unnecessary costs.
So for you listening, this is a clear case. Scientific investment directly saves money and lives.
A highly effective form of risk reduction, not just a cost.
Those numbers are striking. So where does forecasting go next? We've seen incredible progress, but are there new hurdles, new challenges?
Unfortunately, yes. There are real concerns about recent budget shifts threatening future progress.
How so?
Sources indicate significant budget changes affected agencies involved in natural disasters during a recent administration. FEMA, the National Weather Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Impacting their ability to continue improvements.
James Franklin, a retired meteorologist, called the post-Katrina investment the greatest success for forecast accuracy. But he and others fear future progress might be stymied,
making the next generation of improvements less likely to happen.
It highlights that critical ongoing debate about sustained investment in these vital areas, especially facing escalating climate threats.
Are there specific areas where improvement is still needed?
Michael Brennan hopes to see inland flooding forecasts improve next.
Inland flooding, like from Hurricane Helene.
Exactly. He mentioned the National Hurricane Center issued an unprecedented release about extreme flooding risk in the Appalachians for Helene, really trying to ring the alarm bell.
But it still caught people off guard.
The eventual extent inland did, yes. As Brennan notes, we learn something from every event, applying lessons from Katrina, Ian, Helene to continuously improve.
A constant learning cycle.
Absolutely. Communications, services, forecasts, always adapting.
Then there's that persistent evacuation dilemma.
And it's growing, isn't it? Rapidly intensifying hurricanes, more common with climate change, shrink that critical evacuation window.
And New Orleans needs
a full 72 hours to safely evacuate everyone. A massive undertaking.
That window might just not be available with a rapidly intensifying Cat 4 or 5.
A terrifying prospect.
Which is why, for you, the listener, awareness is key. Understanding these trends, the progress, the challenges, it's part of the solution.
Informed citizens can advocate for a sustained investment for community preparedness,
helping safeguard lives and livelihoods. So wrapping this up, what does it all mean? We've journeyed through two decades of incredible science, amazing engineering,
satellites to armored levees,
all driven by the harsh lessons of Hurricane Katrina. We've seen forecasting is dramatically better.
Storm surge is better understood, better predicted.
And New Orleans' defenses are significantly more robust, much stronger than before. But crucial challenges remain. Intensifying storms due to climate change, potential funding fluctuations.
We've made immense strides, but Mother Nature keeps evolving.
And so must our preparedness, our vigilance, our commitment to keep improving.
This really raises an important question for you listening at home to consider. What role do you think continued scientific investment plays in safeguarding our communities?
Beyond the tech.
Exactly. Even with the most advanced technology, the best engineering, the human element remains the ultimate variable.
Our ability to prepare, respond, adapt.
How do we ensure effective communication, comprehensive community preparedness, not only keep pace with science, but actually lead the way?
Especially when the stakes are just so incredibly high.
It's the critical question.
That's a powerful thought to leave you with. And it really underscores why meteorology matters.
We hope this exploration has given you a clearer, more nuanced picture.
The complexities and the triumphs in hurricane science and safety. If you found this insightful, please like, follow, comment, and rate Meteorology Matters wherever you listen.
Your feedback helps others find the show.
And for more incredible insights into weather phenomena, make sure to follow meteorologist Rob Jones.
Where can people find him?
You can find him on Instagram as meteorologist. That's easy to remember.
Got it.
On TikTok, he's TV meteorologist.
Okay.
And on YouTube, just search for Rob Jones Hurricane. You'll also find the Meteorology Matters playlist there.
Excellent. Lots of ways to connect.
Definitely. Until next time, stay informed, stay curious, and stay safe.